Welcome to the Tapping Insiders Club. This is your host, Jessica Ortner. By listening to this audio, you acknowledge that you have read and agree to the disclaimer located at www.tappinginsidersclub.com/disclaimer. We hope this interview gives you new insights on how to be a healthier and a happier you. Enjoy. In this interview, you'll learn how tapping can support you in the grieving process. We'll be speaking to Carol Look from attractingabundance.com. Welcome, Carol.
Hi, Jessica.
Carol, this is a really important topic to cover, and I want to start with just the basic. Technically, what is grief? What are we dealing with?
Grief is a response to an experience of loss. So usually we talk about it with losing a person, losing a loved one, or a pet, but you can also experience grief losing an experience in your life, you know, having a decade be over in your life, having something else. You know, I know someone who had terrible grief over losing a home and having to move because of certain circumstances. So grief can be triggered by many experiences, but the main one we talk about is losing loved ones or a favorite pet.
Mm-hmm. And Carol, can you tell us a little bit about your experiences around grief and why this topic is something that's important for you to share?
It is really important for me because I experienced quite a lot of it, you know, that was a surprise to me. And so I had to learn how to deal with it. And I hadn't really worked with much grief before that. But just briefly, I'll tell just one of the stories that I went through because it's important, is that in 2001, on June 11th, my father-in-law died. And that may sound like a distant relative, but we were all very close to him. And what happened is he died, and then the paramedics put him back together by putting him on a machine, and then we all went out there, and then we had to take him off life support, which is just an awful, awful experience for people. Some people say it can be lovely. This was not. I mean, it was just very, very sad. And then 3 months later, on 9/11, was September 11th. So within 3 months was September 11th, and being in New York, it was just grief. Every feeling you could imagine was connected to that. And then exactly 3 months later, on December 11th, I woke up to the phone call that my younger sister had died from breast cancer. And it was just bam, 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 three in a row. It was too much to handle. And grief is, you know, as we're saying, a response to an experience of loss. And I had these three things in a row. The deepest for me was losing my younger sister, of course. And it was just, it was a wild ride. It's still not over, I would say. It really, grief, you know, takes a long time, but there's stages of it, and it's a process. And that's what I want to really help people with, is it's a process. You know, it's a very, you know, everyone says death is a natural part of life, and it is. It is an absolutely inevitable, natural part of our lives to experience death. But the feelings almost feel unnatural. They're so strong and so powerful, and it's really challenging to know what to do with them and how to handle the, quote, grieving process. And so I was basically knocked on my rear end, and I had to learn, unfortunately, a lot about it and learn, you know, and it was helpful to certainly to use the tapping with it.
Well, then let's talk about this process, the grieving process. What's the best way to grieve?
I would say the best way, and I always say this to my clients, is to do it slowly. And you need to do what's right for you. There are a lot of people who say, well, oh, you need to do this. Oh, you need to go through your, you know, let's say you lost a sibling or a parent or somebody. You need to go through their belongings right away, or you need to throw out their books, or you need to do this. You don't need to do anything. What you need to do is to do what's right for you. So what's the right way? And there are people who need to talk about it and talk about it and talk about it with all their friends, and other people close the door and go into a cave. And we all have different ways of processing, again, the intensity of the feelings. It is really hard to describe to people who haven't experienced it the intensity and what takes over. I mean, sometimes you feel like you're going a little nuts. The feelings, and I know people listening are going to say, oh, good, you know, I'm glad to hear that can be normal. You can be walking down the aisle in the grocery store, you know, picking out pasta, and you start crying. It's certainly in the beginning, and then it can last for a longer time. Feel overwhelming before you get back on your feet.
Mm-hmm. And Carol, when you say the right way, do you mean what comes natural to you? I mean, how do we know that we're doing it the right way?
There isn't a right way, and that's the problem, is people have written books about the right way, and you have to do it this way and in this order. There's no such thing, and I've just experienced that over and over again with myself and with others. The right way is taking care of yourself, because a lot happens. You know, when someone dies, and it depends how you hear about it. If it's sudden death versus something you know is coming versus someone who's elderly versus a child, you know, there are all these factors that make it a little different for everybody and make the situation a little different. The only right way is to take care of yourself. And if taking care of yourself is being, you know, with loved ones and talking about it nonstop and talking about the person and looking at pictures for months and months and months and talking about it and, you know, going into their bedroom and doing what you need to do, then that's what you need to do. What happens is people can get stuck in the worst part of the pain and not process the really painful part, which is that it has happened. We don't move on, but what we need to do is keep processing the feelings and the layers. It's really quite a layered process, and sometimes if we get stuck, we don't deal with the layers, and then it feels as if it happened yesterday. And with time, it doesn't stay that way. It doesn't stay as if it's happened yesterday. With time and with tapping and talking and being cared for and caring for yourself, you're still going to have the loss. The person is no longer there, or your favorite pet is no longer there, but it's not going to feel like that stabbing knife in the heart as if you just heard it yesterday.
And Carol, what about when people talk about getting over it?
Yeah, I hear people talk about that a lot, and they say, well, she's just not over it. She's just not getting over it. The first thing to do is to stop telling yourself to, quote, get over it. It's really, I'm never going to, quote, get over losing my younger sister to cancer. She had two small children and a husband and, you know, damn near killed my parents. I mean, watching the whole family, it was just, the whole thing was incredibly painful. And getting over it, I just would never call it that. You know, I can go through something really good or really painful in my life, and I want to call her. We were less than 18 months apart. I want to call her. So am I over it in that way? No, but I don't cry every day. I don't cry every week about it. You know, now her kids are growing up and they're teenagers, and I want her to be here and watch them, right? So the process keeps going because your life keeps going. But as I say, it's not that sharp, sharp pain every day at all. I wish she were here, but just getting over it is the wrong phrase. I would take that out of everybody's vocabulary. You process it. You move on to different stages. Mm-hmm. You move on to saying, oh, I wish that person were here to witness the wedding. That, you know, that's what happens, Jess, is that you do, you know, you do the process. You feel differently, you know, after a month and after 3 months and after 6 months and after a year. And, you know, and then something happens, like Christmas or their first birthday, right? That your first birthday that they're not there to celebrate, and, you know, or somebody gets married in the family and that person, that woman or man is no longer there. Like, it's the first time that person, like someone said to me, their father couldn't make it to the sister's wedding, right? Yeah. So it was the first time he didn't walk somebody down the aisle, so that was really upsetting. So all these markations, all these holidays and events in families really can re-trigger the grief, and you have to process again. Okay, what's it like that the first time the grandmother isn't at a family event? She's been at 10 family events for the last, you know, 80 years. Now what? So it's really important to stop telling yourself to, quote, get over it. You're going to process it and move through it and look at it differently and have different angles towards it. But, you know, I've worked with a woman who lost her mother. I think she was maybe 10 or 11, and she lost her mother. Well, I don't know. Do you ever get over losing your mother? And then she grew up and she got married, and guess what? Her mother wasn't at her wedding, and her mother wasn't at the birth of her first child. So it keeps getting triggered, and there are different layers. What we want to do is help people not be in that depth, the depth of pain, of grief. That's what time and tapping and being loved and taking care of yourself and sharing with other people who knew the person, that's what can really soothe you, even though loss is loss and loss feels terrible. You know, and a lot of people say some, you know, sort of glib statements, oh, well, now they're at peace. Well, I don't know, are they? You know, in other words, people try to make you feel better. and they say really, really insensitive things, not because they're insensitive, but because they don't know what to do. Grief actually scares people. So if you've lost someone, a friend of yours might say something to you that feels empty or feels hurtful or feels, you know, off. And it's not because they're trying to be, you know, insensitive. It's just they don't know what to say. So people say, oh, well, now they're in heaven. Well, don't say that to someone who has no religious beliefs. That's not helpful. You know, oh, well, now, you know, it must be the best. It must be what was meant to happen. That feels terrible to people. I have a friend who lost her daughter at age 11. You know, and someone said, well, it must have been what's meant to be. Don't say that to somebody. So I learned a whole lot about what not to say to other people, because I had people say stuff to me that was, you know, at the time, I mean, there's no charge on it now, but at the time it was really hurtful. And they didn't mean to be hurtful, and I knew that, but I couldn't believe some of the things people said in an effort to fill the space, in an effort just to help you, and they're not helping. You know, the only thing that helps is having someone really be there for you and witness your pain, and don't fix it. It's not fixable. And sometimes we try to fix ourselves, Jess. That's another problem, is that we try to get over it. We're going to fix it. We're going to become a workaholic. We're going to do this project, and we're going to do this, and we're going to get over it. You know what? It's not fixable. It's a process. So we can try to fix ourselves as well as experience other people with good intentions, right? But they really make mistakes. They try to fix us too. Don't worry. With time will really help. That's not a helpful thing to hear 2 weeks after, let's say, your son dies. That is a miserable thing to hear. So we have to be really sensitive and really careful. And sometimes, I remember one of the best condolence letters I ever got is, sometimes there are no words. I'm thinking of you. You know, that was medicine to me. That had really helped.
Yeah. Carol, you're talking so much about this process. And so what really happens during the grief process?
Well, it's interesting. First of all, again, depending on how you hear about it, like was it someone who was elderly? Was it a shocking phone call? Was it something out of the blue? Was someone ill for a long time? You know, was the child born with an illness and then you knew they weren't going to last that long? You know, how did it happen? When it happens, though, even if you've been prepared for it, it's a shock to the system. And I think it's a trauma to the system. So again, we can say, well, grief is a natural part of life, but it's still a complete shock to the system. And you'll hear that. People will say their elderly, I know someone who said their elderly parent, you know, was, they knew they were going to die and they were ill and they'd had a long, healthy life and et cetera, et cetera. It's still a shock to the system when it happens. So the shock happens and you feel it physically. And that's very, very common. I know I felt it, but a lot of people will say that they feel like they've been hit by a truck. Like physically, and it's not the depression yet that can sink in later for people, but it literally feels like you were knocked over. You know, you're heartbroken. You literally feel, and this, of course, grief happens a lot with people in relationships. So breakups and divorces and splits and friendships, and it feels like a grieving process. So you feel heartbroken, you feel it physically, it's a trauma to the system. And there's this huge emotional upheaval depending on how much the person was in your life. Like if the person was in your life every day, that's different than it's a person that you talk to every 3 months and you're still shocked to hear that they had an accident. Oh, no, really? Wow, I see him or her once a year. You know, it's still a shock, but it's different than someone who's a part of your daily life. And then there are changes in the family structure. Like for me, I was number 3 out of 4 girls. The 4th girl died. I'm now, you know, I sort of became the youngest, but I'll never be the youngest. But my youngest sister died out of the 4 girls. So the whole family system is kind of, and it doesn't ever get rearranged, so to speak, but it feels odd. I mean, it feels really strange. So you have to kind of pay attention to that. And what about identity issues? You know, when my father-in-law died, my mother-in-law had been married to him for decades. Who was she now without her husband of decades? So identity issues come up. I say to people, and this is where I do some tapping with them, every cell in your body is affected by grief. And picture that. Literally, the energetics and the cells in your body get affected. Right? So if someone related to you just dies, think of it just energetically with the DNA and how we're connected. Everything changes. And another thing that happens is that people tend to feel very, very isolated, which is really, really sad because they need to be feeling not isolated, and we can feel as alone and isolated as possible, you know, and it's really, really, really hard. That's why I keep saying that you have to take care of yourself. After my sister died, everybody in my family gained between 10 and 15 pounds. Two of them started smoking again. One of them relapsed with alcoholism. I mean, you're just not yourself. You don't sleep as well. Your eating habits change. Your schedule changes. And what about going back to work? I had to go back to work, and I don't announce to all my clients, by the way, I don't feel like working because my sister died. It's not, you know, that's when you're a practitioner, when you're a therapist, that's not information for your clients. So all these things, your whole world is, and again, depending on how close the person was or how what a vital part of your life they were, your whole world is thrown up into the air, which is why people can't land. That's why you said you got so many requests for the topic of grief. It is so disorienting. Who am I now? What do I do now? I used to see them every Sunday, or I used to see them every day, or I used to, you know, they were a close cousin or whatever. Now what? Mm-hmm. Everything in your life changes. So it's really, it's complicated and it's heavy, and it is a healing, it really is a process.
Now, what about the typical stages of grief that many of us read about?
It's interesting. So Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is the famous writer and practitioner who worked on the stages of grief and, you know, denial and acceptance and anger. And you know, they're very useful if someone would like to read about them. Again, Kubler-Ross, that most people have heard of her, done a lot of work on death and dying and the process. But I found that I didn't, and a lot of my clients have not followed that procedure. You don't really go through the stages in the same way. Like something I did, which was just a defense mechanism, was I tried to figure everything out. So I didn't get enraged with the way some people get enraged. I tried to figure it out. Why did it happen? Why did it happen to her? What's going on? What's the message? What about the family? What does this mean generationally? And that was a defense mechanism, right? I had to learn a lot about it, which is basically, when I say a defense mechanism, it was a way for me not to deal with the pain. But then, of course, the pain comes up and you can't avoid it. Well, actually, that's not true. You can avoid it. People sometimes feel desperate to avoid it, and they become workaholics, alcoholics. You know, they do something to blot out the pain, and you really need to get back to dealing with the loss, or else you'll be at a deficit yourself just for handling life in general. And I'm afraid to say it out loud, everybody, but guess what? We're not going to all experience one death in our lives. It's going to keep, it's life. It's going to happen. So, you know, we need to be not prepared. That's not what I mean. We need to work on the current death and dealing with the feelings as best as we can, as best as we can, so that we are more resilient and we feel like we're more resourceful and we went through whatever stages we go through. And then, you know what, then maybe, like, I'm dealing with a client whose children, both her kids, are going off to college, and she's feeling profound grief. So she, everything else is changing, and then I think she has an elderly parent who's about to die. So, you know, there are a lot of stages in our lives that we need to go through.
I think it's so important that we covered, or that you covered this so in depth on how grief shows up, because I can already imagine so many people listening to this and finally feeling relief that they're not alone with all the different things that come up. So we learned a little bit about how grief shows up and the process. How does tapping play a role in all of this? What can we do?
Well, I would say the first thing to do is tap on the trauma and the shock, because that's what keeps us stuck. So let's say something happened in 2007. You know, that's what could keep us stuck, is the trauma and the shock of it. How did you hear about it? You know, I've got, you know, a client who's phobic about cell phones, because every time the cell phone rings, you know, it's bad news. So how did you hear about it? What was the trauma like when someone said, are you sitting, you know, this is the phrase, are you sitting down? I have bad news. Just that phrase can trigger people. So one of the things to do is to tap on the trauma and the shock of it, because that often keeps you out of dealing with the basic grief. Like, you're walking around bumping into walls. I don't, you know, I can only describe my experience, and you're just disoriented. And even if you saw it coming, now you have to handle things differently. And you walk out the door and say, oh my gosh, my life will never be the same. And it won't. So don't try to make it the same. That's what people do. They try to make it the same. You know what? You can reorient around it. My family reoriented around it. loved the kids, stayed with, you know, totally in touch with the kids and my brother-in-law. And, you know, we all went through and continue to go through different stages. But that trauma and shock of it needs to be dealt with. So, for instance, if we were doing tapping, you might do, even though I'm still in shock, and I don't care if it was 20 years ago, I have dealt with all these mothers for some reason at workshops. There, and maybe I'm afraid it just happens, you know, more frequently than we hear about. All these mothers who lost actually adult children, so over the age of 18, and they lost adult children to an accident or an illness, and somehow they've showed up in my workshops and I've worked with them. And even if it's 20, 30 years ago, so let's say the parent could be in their 60s or 70s, and they lost the child 20 or 30 years ago when the child was an adult, they still have the shock and trauma of hearing about it, what happened, and that idea a parent is never supposed to lose a child, right? That's just not normal. That's not natural. That's not how, as painful as grief can be if you lose people in the older generation, is not how it's supposed to happen the other way around. So trauma shock, first thing I always say to people. And what about how you feel? You just need to go to the feelings. And maybe you need to tap on, even though I don't know, let's do that one together, Jess, but even though I don't know if I'll ever get over it.
Okay.
Please. Because that's true. People believe that. Okay, so everyone listening, go at your own pace, but let's do this at the karate chop. Even though I don't know if I'll ever get over it.
Even though I don't know if I'll ever get over it.
The loss seems too profound.
The loss seems too profound.
And I'm too sad.
And I'm too sad.
I deeply and profoundly accept myself anyway.
I deeply and profoundly accept myself anyway.
Even though I'm not sure I'll ever get over it.
Even though I'm not sure I'll ever get over it.
I'm doing the best I can.
I'm doing the best I can.
Even though I want to stop trying to, quote, get over it.
Even though I'm still trying to, quote, get over it.
I choose to relax and appreciate the job I'm doing.
I choose to relax and appreciate the job I'm doing.
Eyebrow, I can't get over it.
I can't get over it.
Side of the eye, and I accept that about where I am.
And I accept that about where I am.
Under the eye, I can't seem to get over this loss of mine.
I can't seem to get over this loss of mine.
Under the nose, and I accept that about myself.
And I accept that about myself.
Chin, I haven't been able to get over it yet.
I haven't been able to get over it yet.
Collarbone, and maybe I never will.
And maybe I never will.
Under the arm, and I appreciate the processing I'm doing.
And I appreciate the processing I'm doing.
Top of it, and I'm going to respect myself by allowing myself to be sad when I need to.
And I'm going to respect myself by allowing myself to be sad when I need to.
Good. Take a deep breath. Another thing societally I would say is that, again, many people are very anxious around grief. So if you've lost someone, when I lost someone, there were people around me who they basically couldn't handle that I was in grief, right? It was so upsetting to them. They tried to fix it or they couldn't handle it. And that's just you accepting yourself where you are, no matter what other people say and what's going on around you, is really important. Mm-hmm. So that acceptance statement, even though I may never get over it, that's okay. You know, be where you are, even, and it's very, very painful, and you'll need extra support and extra help, but just own that you're having a bad day. Like sometimes people need to say, you know what, it's the anniversary, the one-year anniversary, the five-year anniversary, the 10-year anniversary, and it just feels sad. I just wrote a cousin of mine who also lost her sister, and it was a total shock, and this week is the anniversary, and I just wrote her and said, you know, I know life isn't the same without her, and I'm just thinking about you, and take care of yourself this week. You don't have to say anything deep and profound. You just say, I'm thinking about you. Mm. So really saying, I accept myself no matter where I am. That's what's hard. I think people think there's a prescribed way to do grief. And, oh, and at 3 months, you should be this. And at 6 months, you should be this. And at the year anniversary, you should be in this place. And you're not. You know, I had people coming in at the three-month anniversary of 9/11 was the day I found out about my sister dying. And people would say, oh, did you watch the three-month anniversary of 9/11? Well, you know, did you do this? Did you do that? Are you commemorating 9/11? It's like, no, I wasn't. I was in day one of my grief, right? So it's just you've got to accept where you are in the process.
Carol, you mentioned the impact that other people's words can have on you when you're going through the grieving process. Is that sometimes a target in itself?
Yes, you can absolutely say, let's do one of those, karate chop. Even though he said something that upset me. But he was trying to help. It didn't help. And it made me feel worse. I accept my reaction. Even though he was only trying to help. And didn't realize that it really hurt. I accept who I am and how I'm reacting. Eyebrow, all these feelings are very confusing. Side of the eye, I know they're trying to help. Under the eye, but it wasn't very helpful. Under the nose, I know they had good intentions. Chin, but it wasn't very helpful. Collarbone, they were anxious about my grief. Under the arm, and I can let it go. Top of that, and I can feel confident that I'm doing it my way. Take a breath. So that's common. And also, you know, feeling guilty, no matter what the relationship. And, you know, there's very complicated grief if there was a lot of conflict in the relationship, like I had a client who lost her father and it was just complicated and, you know, they hadn't dealt with everything. And, you know, that's very different than if you've had a really stable, smooth relationship with someone. It's just different kinds of grief, right? A different process. But I've almost always found that people have a little bit of guilt, either about their last interaction, or they weren't nice enough, or they shouldn't have said what they said 10 years ago. You know, people bring up all sorts of things that they harbor, that they feel terrible about. Oh, maybe I should have been kinder last week. And, you know, well, you didn't know the person was going to die. And it just, we all have little things left over. And I think sometimes that's a way to hold on to a different stage and not really deal with the pain. If you beat yourself up, like my friend who lost her child, oh, but if only we had done there is nothing on this green earth that would have protected what happened to her daughter, right? Oh, if we had taken a left turn, and maybe if we hadn't done this, and maybe if she had, and it's part of the process, and you just let the people go through that. Let them feel guilty if they need to, because it is part of the process. And then when they're ready, right, I couldn't, when her daughter died, a couple of days before the funeral, I did this major tapping with her on a back problem that she had had. That went away. We didn't talk about the death. I mean, we talked about the death, you know, day in and day out, but we didn't tap actually on the grief, so to speak. It was too early. She was right in the middle of it. It was 4 days into it, and she's like planning the funeral for her daughter, right? Mm-hmm. You don't go running in there and tap. But I tapped on a back problem, and I just said things like, these feelings in my back, this overwhelm in my back, the trauma in my back. And it worked. She was like, she was sold on tapping ever since then. But let's do a guilt tapping. How about?
Please.
And so everybody listening, if there is something you said or didn't say, or maybe a disagreement you had, or something you wish hadn't happened between you and the person who's died, see if you can, or feel guilty that you weren't there enough. That happens a lot. People say, I should have been there more towards the end, if they know it's coming. So take whatever is yours, measure it, 0 to 10, how high is the grief, and then I'll do sort of a global wording for the tapping, okay?
Okay.
Karate chop. Even though I feel guilty. And now they're gone. I choose to accept myself anyway. Even though I feel this terrible guilt about that relationship. I accept who I am and that I did the best I could. Even though I'm still carrying some guilt about this relationship. I don't think I did enough. I accept who I am anyway. Eyebrow, this guilt about the relationship. Side of the eye, the guilt about what I said. Under the eye, the guilt about what I did. Under the nose, the guilt about what I didn't say.
The guilt about what I didn't say.
Chin, the guilt about what I didn't do.
The guilt about what I didn't do.
Collarbone, this remaining guilt about that person.
This remaining guilt about that person.
Under the arm, the guilt and grief.
The guilt and grief.
Top of the head, sometimes they're overwhelming.
Sometimes they're overwhelming.
And that's okay.
And that's okay.
And I'm okay.
And I'm okay.
Gotta take a deep breath. And again, the complication, I think that's probably what bowls us over, is the complication of grief. So again, I had to watch my parents go through losing my younger sister, which was almost more painful than the rest of it. It was just almost intolerable for me. I had to watch her little kids, I think 9 and 4 or something. Oh, my word, right? And my brother-in-law and my other sisters and myself. And it's very your lives are supposed to, quote, go on. Yet the person's missing, yet how do you go on? It's just you have hurt, grief, anger, fear, guilt, the identity issues, the forlornness, the brokenheartedness, and the feelings. As I said earlier, you can feel like you've been hit by a truck because there's so many of them. Some people feel relief when there's a death. Oh, I've talked to someone who felt relief when there was the death, and then she felt guilty that she felt relieved that the person had died. The person was very, very sick and not taking care of themselves, and I think there were drugs and alcohol involved. So she felt relieved almost that the person was out of their suffering, but then felt guilty that the relief was there. So it can be very complicated, and then we don't tell people if it's complicated. We just talk about, sorry for your loss. So the complication and the depth of the feelings, it's really like something we've never experienced before. So maybe someone lost a grandparent early on and that was pretty intense and painful, but then if they lose someone that's even closer later, it's just, it's almost too much for our bodies as our container is, to handle. That's what happens. I think it spills out and it spills out into work. And I remember people would come in as clients, so this was, years ago, they would come in and they'd say, I'm having a bad day and my boss is so cranky and this would, And I'd have those feelings, which are natural feelings of a practitioner working with people when they're going through grief, which means the practitioner has got to take care of themselves and maybe take more time off than I did. And I would remember having the feeling going, oh my gosh, you think you've had a bad day? You start to compare and you can't compare, but you need to take care of yourself for those reasons. And sometimes people do compare. They'll say, oh, well, how old was she? Well, it's irrelevant whether the person was 6, 26, or 86, right? But people want to get a handle. Well, if they were 86, okay, well, they had a good life. That's not helpful either to people. So you want to just be as I say, I learned so much about how to help other people by being respectfully, almost respectfully quiet. The less said and just saying, that sounds really painful and I'm sorry for your loss and it sounds really awful. Instead of, now they're, we don't, whatever your beliefs are, we don't, we can't prove anything, right? So it gets complicated and people have very set ways that they do their own grieving. So I had a client who lost someone and people said, oh, well, now it's 6 months, you're feeling better. You know what? Actually, she wasn't. 6 months was a bad, bad turning point. Shock can last anywhere from a week to 3 months. So if you're in shock for the first 3 months and you're doing the paperwork that you have to do and you're planning the funeral and you're doing something with their clothing and there are all these tasks that you have to do, if you're still in shock and then you start to come out of shock, you can feel worse 3 months, 6 months, 9 months later. So that's why there's no set way to do it, and tapping can help you every step of the way. I remember doing tapping where it wasn't so prescribed, where I was saying, okay, here's the problem, here's the setup statement. I would just tap. I would sometimes look at pictures and just tap and let myself cry, and it was, very soothing because it was very accepting. I really think the acceptance of wherever you are is what's got to be a key component. And some people use a little bit of tapping, and some people use tapping every day for it. Neither way is right or wrong, everyone. This is, it's just an additional tool that could help you with that sharp, sharp pain and help you move through the months and the years of now living on this earth without that person that you were close to. It's hard to explain. How do you explain that to people? It's just, it doesn't feel right.
Carol, I think this is so important to hear, and I want to reiterate to people how you began to tap just while looking at pictures and the feelings, because many people get stuck because, like you said, it's such a complicated process and there's so many emotions that they feel like they can't do the basic setup statement and the, you know, doing the 1 to 10 scale.
Right. So then when you get up in the morning and you feel lousy, tap for a few minutes without saying anything. You're probably going to be a little bit weepy. See, that's what would happen in the very beginning. Late at night and early in the morning is when I was the weepiest, right? During the day, I'd get busy and get involved in my day and do the best I could. And sure, I felt sad, but it was like those lonely moments late at night and early in the morning. So you just tap and then use props. Some people, some parents or family members might open the door to the room. Let's say they've kept it closed for a couple of months, or they haven't gone in there. You know how people do that. You hear those stories. They haven't touched the room. So you might need to walk into the room and just tap as you look at the belongings of the person. I remember when a grandfather of mine had died, and my grandmother, you know, she walked into the room and saw all his clothes in the closet, and that was a particular moment of complete meltdown, right? She made it through the funeral. She made it through everything. And I remember her asking my father and other people to get, you know, to do something with the clothes. So other people won't do anything with the person's clothes for 6 months to a year to 10 years. So, again, it's not right or wrong, but if you need to and you feel like you can, open the closet door and tap while you see his or her clothes. Look at this. If it's, you know, if you've lost a child, you know, I just think it's unbearable. The people who've talked to me about losing a child, I don't even understand it. It seems beyond the ability to bear it. And yet those people continue to live. My very, very, very dear older friend, who I've known for years and years, she and her husband are 83. Their 26-year-old grandson just died of a brain tumor. Like, there's nothing to say, Jess. There's, you know, there's nothing to do but sit with them and talk about it and talk about the memories. And that she knows how to tap, so like if she wants to, I can lead her through some tapping about, even though it's amazing that he's gone and I can't believe it, because again, they're in that stage. It was only a month ago. So they're in that stage of, is it really true? I just saw him. And that's what can happen with people, is they say, it's just not true. I'm waiting for them to walk in the door. Like you actually start to have these thoughts and feelings of denial and a little bit, oh, I mean, not clinical hallucination, but you actually think you know, I wonder if they could walk in the door. I mean, it's just, as again, I'm trying to say, we can start to feel a little crazy. So we need support. We need love. We need to talk to other people who knew them. We need to, you know, soothe ourselves and take care of ourselves, get rest, get sleep, you know, do some tapping on the props, as we were saying. Look at the photographs, if you can bear it, if you can look at the photographs, and let yourself cry. Our culture, you know, oh, no, no, you'll be fine, you'll be fine. I've actually had someone do that to me. You'll be fine, you'll be fine. You know what? I don't know that I'll be fine, but maybe I will. But don't tell me that when I'm crying, because the instant effect is to stop the crying. Like if you're crying and I say, oh, Jess, don't cry, you'll be fine. The effect is it'll stop you from crying, which means it'll stop the process. So again, don't do that to people. Let them bawl their eyes out. It feels good. It's appropriate to cry. That's what we do in our world. Loss feels that deep. Your body can even, I know people listening are gonna recognize this. Your body can even shake and move in ways when you cry that hard and that deeply that are just, you've never felt it before. You know, you just don't know what's happening. You can feel incredibly odd that your body is moving that way when you cry. And again, crying at the depths, literally the depths of your soul. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the healing process.
Carol, what about the memories of the moment that you found out, or any memories that seem to haunt you in the way? And the reason I ask this is because many people have seen the film and they saw the process that Renee went through and how he was replaying in his mind the accident over and over again. Can you tell us a little bit about how to approach that when we feel like we're just grasping onto this memory and playing it over and over again?
It's the same process, Jess, as trauma. It gets stuck in your body and it goes loop to loop. And you keep seeing it, right? So the visualization, the feeling in your body, the smell, it's like someone having a car accident and living, and they keep going over it, and they hear the screeching brakes, and right? So it gets stuck in us. And that's a big piece of moving on to the month-by-month process of grieving, is getting over the actual shock or trauma. And, of course, it depends. If you were there when someone died, if you heard about it, if you were a part of it, you know, whatever went on there, you know, obviously every story in the book about, you know, people dying. So the stuckness, the loop-de-loop, I can't get over replaying, you know, the accident, let's say call it an accident in my mind, that you can really tap on. Because if you start to tap, you might find another layer in there. I think I could have done something. I can't believe I keep seeing it. I keep hearing her last words. Right? So you keep, just tap on it very gently. Again, if you don't do the full setup statement, that's okay. And of course, at this point, I want to say, if anybody feels slightly or dramatically suicidal because the loss is too much for you, you really do need to go see a practitioner. You need the extra support. You know, it can actually be typical, frankly, to have momentary thoughts of, oh, you know, if I died, I wouldn't be in this pain. But if it lasts longer than moments, then it's crossed a line and you really need the support and the help, because that's what happens. Grief can be that bad that you don't feel like living, going on living when that person who's close to you has died. That's actually quite typical. So these incredible feelings are typical or normal, and we just need more help and extra help and more support to take care of them. So, you know, I want to do a tapping on the broken heart.
Yes.
Because even though that's used typically with relationships and love relationships, anybody you lose, you can feel like a piece of you's gone or you broke your heart. Okay?
Okay.
Karate chop. Even though it feels as if my heart broke.
Even though it feels as if my heart broke.
When she died.
When she died.
I accept who I am and how my body is responding.
I accept who I am and how my body is responding.
Even though it feels like I'm heartbroken.
Even though it feels like I'm heartbroken.
And I'm so sad.
And I'm so sad.
I accept who I am and how I'm feeling.
I accept who I am and how I'm feeling.
Even though I feel heartbroken now that they're gone.
Even though I feel heartbroken now that they're gone.
I accept who I am and how I feel.
I accept who I am and how I feel.
Eyebrow, I hate this heartbreaking feeling.
I hate this heartbreaking feeling.
Side of the eye. I know there's some really good memories.
I know there's some really good memories.
Under the eye, but I can't access them right now.
But I can't access them right now.
Under the nose, my heart is broken.
My heart is broken.
Chin, I feel totally devastated.
I feel totally devastated.
Collarbone, and that's okay.
And that's okay.
Under the arm, in time, I will remember some of those good things.
In time, I will remember some of those good things.
Top of that, in time, I will be able to remember the good things.
In time, I will be able to remember the good things.
Good. Take a breath. So never pretend that your heart isn't broken. And some people can remember good memories the next day. And that's part of their process. They remember, oh, do you remember how funny he was about this? Or do you, you know, and at the funeral, there's really uplifting stories and jokes that really help the process. And other people literally can't remember something good for months because they feel so, and again, not really depressed. That's not the accurate word. They feel so down and forlorn and grief-stricken, right? That's the word, grief-stricken, that they can't access other more positive pieces of the person or the relationship because they're just focused on, because it feels so awful, all they can feel is loss. So again, my point is just do it your way. Do it, you know, as fast or slowly as you want to. There's no right way. If you have lost someone close to you, your life isn't going to be the same without that person, and stop trying to make it the same. Right? Get people in your life who are supportive and can tolerate it. You know, again, this is just our culture. People have a hard time tolerating the heaviest of feelings. One thing it did for me was help me be able to hold people's pain. I mean, be able to hold, almost embrace a space for them in my work. My work changed dramatically. And then I had other, even, believe it or not, worse grief stuff that I'm not going to talk about on this call a few years later. And it's actually helped me because I went through it. I didn't avoid it. Right, I really went through it and did the process and cried and still talk about it, you know, and I really go through the stages and tapped on the trauma and tapped on the sadness. so that now my capacity to handle my emotions and other people's is dramatically different. And I thought my capacity was pretty high 10 years ago. So in the end, you know, maybe that's an upside and a positive side. And, you know, and maybe it brings people back together in families. And maybe, it, you know, maybe it's a time for people to, you know, go over old memories and talk things through. And, you know, so much good can come out of it. But, you know, that's an afterthought. Sudden grief and grief that you could see coming, it's what it is. It's grief. It feels deep and terrible and sad and lonely and heartbreaking, and some good things can come out of it. But, you know, you can't tell people that when they're right in the middle of it. It doesn't feel like that. It feels like their world is over. And that's why I say, really, people listening, please, if there's any sense that you really, you know, don't want to go on living, you know, that's a feeling, but I'd like you to get professional help for that, because there is some help, and I'm not saying you're going to feel great, and I'm not saying you're going to feel wonderful. I remember when another grief incident happened that was really bad for me, and I remember it happened in January, and in July of that year, I laughed at something that someone said, and I noticed, I went, oh my word, I hadn't laughed like that in 6 months. But I didn't know I hadn't laughed like that in 6 months until I did it, if that's clear, you know. So it was just, I didn't even know what I was, in a way, it's hard to watch yourself. And that's why it's also important to have close other loved ones and caretakers looking at you and saying, you know what, you seem to be doing better this week. Or, you know what, you look down, you know, seems like you've had a really tough week. I bet that anniversary date or place reminded you of the person. You know, get people. I hope we all have people in our life who can tolerate it and really be generous of spirit and say, you know what, I bet this is tough. I bet this is a tough, it's the holiday month. I bet it's really tough to have your, it's only the second year without your, you know, whoever, mother, brother, father, sister, you know, I bet that's tough. I bet it's still tough, because it is still tough. People will tell you 20 and 30 years, they don't feel grief-stricken anymore, but boy, do they notice when so-and-so isn't around the dinner table. Mm-hmm. Right, so it's a part of life, but boy, can the tapping really, really help us with that sharpness and moving through and being able to tolerate the feelings and accepting yourself and accepting the truth, which many of us don't want to accept at the time, which is like, are you kidding? This can't be possible. And again, that often happens with when people who are younger die, you know, or an accident where it's just not possible. It's just not possible that this person who was 16 died. It's not possible that someone 25 years old died. You know, so that's when it's a little bit more challenging than someone who's maybe had a long illness and is 85 years old. That's, you know, that can feel different depending on the family member and depending on your relationship with them. But again, never compare. Like, never compare, well, this person was old and, like, the kid I told you about, you know, was 26 or whatever. Like, it's not comparable. We don't compare. Everybody's grief belongs to them. Everybody can do tapping on, you know, again, so the feelings could be anger, hurt, loss, bereavement, you know, pain. Cause, and again, it really comes out as physical pain. After my sister died, after those three things in a row, I developed a tumor in my right hand, you know, which made me feel totally helpless. Well, of course, how do you think I felt about not being able to help my sister with cancer, right? Totally helpless. So it was a perfect physiological manifestation. My right hand, which I had to have the tumor taken out and bandaged, and, you know, it was this whole big thing, because at that point it had gone too far, and I couldn't tap on it and get the quote tumor to go down. I was not in a position to do that. It was 10 years ago in my career, and it just wasn't the right thing to do. And I really trusted my gut, and the doctor said, take it out now. So that was the better step to do. But then it was a clue to me, I must not be dealing with enough, because it's coming out in my body. So that was really important information and was very useful, even though the grief seems to be showing up. Can we do one on that?
Yes, please.
So everyone, if you're feeling it in your body, and again, maybe it feels like heaviness or depression, or maybe you can't stop smoking, or maybe you're having illnesses or pains yourself, that's very common and typical, and really how the human body works. So karate chop. Even though my grief is showing up in my body.
Even though my grief is showing up in my body.
I choose to allow myself to cry instead.
I choose to allow myself to cry instead.
Even though the grief seems to be showing up in my body.
Even though the grief seems to be showing up in my body.
I accept who I am anyway.
I accept who I am anyway.
Even though the grief has been showing up in my body.
Even though the grief has been showing up in my body.
I'm going to give myself space to express my feelings.
I'm going to give myself space to express my feelings.
Eyebrow. I'm going to express my loss and pain.
I'm going to express my loss and pain.
Side of the eye. So my body doesn't have to.
So my body doesn't have to.
Under the eye. I'm going to express my hurt and loneliness.
I'm going to express my hurt and loneliness.
Under the nose. So my body doesn't have to.
So my body doesn't have to.
Chin. I'm going to give myself permission to cry and cry.
I'm going to give myself permission to cry and cry.
Collarbone. I'm going to give myself permission to laugh and to be joyful again.
I'm going to give myself permission to laugh and be joyful again.
Under the arm, I give myself permission to have all of my feelings.
I give myself permission to have all of my feelings.
Top of that, I'm allowed to have all of these feelings.
I'm allowed to have all of these feelings.
Every day.
Every day.
And I appreciate the process I'm going through.
And I appreciate the process I'm going through.
Good. Take a deep breath. And so people listening, you can see how you could take almost each of those sentences and do a new tapping round, because I realize I'm doing what's coming to me now and what you and I are talking about, and maybe it's not hitting home, but you could take a version of the phrase or something else that's going on. Maybe the heartbroken one is what you, someone listening, really needs to work on. Maybe the guilt. Maybe they haven't heard anything since I said the word guilt, because that really, really hit them and feels like they need to work on the guilt. You know, maybe it's, they feel guilty because they're moving on with their life. That is very typical. People are like, but I'm not supposed to be happy. You know, someone died. And it's like, well, you're allowed to be happy. That's part of the process, is to move through and shift through all the feelings. And the seasons is like you go through the year, and each season brings another layer of it.
Carol, I have been personally touched by this interview. It's been really incredible. And on behalf of myself and all those who are listening, thank you so much for just being so open and sharing all this information with us.
Thank you, Jess. I hope it helps a lot of people. The tapping is just a phenomenal tool and can really help you through a process that we all have to go through.